Coming up, we're going to be calling home with someone who's lucky enough, or they're calling us actually, to live in Honolulu in the Hawaiian Islands. And Hawaii is located in the Pacific Ocean. It's about 3,200 kilometres from the US mainland. It's the only US state located outside of North America. It's the only state composed entirely of islands, and it's the only state in the tropics. How the Americans came to be there is another story. But it has 1.4 million residents, and two-thirds of the population lives on Oahu, home to the state's capital and the largest city, Honolulu. Amanda Ellis is originally from Dunedin and is the Executive Director of Hawaii and Asia Pacific for the Global Institute of Sustainability and Innovation, but she has myriad other talents and areas of expertise, including gender equality, women and leadership, and international development. And she's also the author of two books on women and business. Aloha, kakahiaka. Good morning, Amanda.
Aloha, Karen and Morena. I'm very impressed with your Hawaiian.
No, I'm learning. I just learnt good morning to speak to you. So I hope I got it right. You live in the Manoa Valley, Amanda, in the suburb of Honolulu, but it's not really a suburb as we know it. It's a spectacular basin with a very lush tropical landscape. Beautiful place.
It is absolutely stunning. And we live almost halfway between the ocean, where there's about 10 inches of rainfall a year. And then right up in the mountains, there's around 300 inches. So we're around midway, and that's why we have several growing seasons a year, and we can never quite keep up with the garden.
What do you have in your garden?
We have four beautiful avocado trees and a huge big piri mango, which I really think is the best mango in the world. We have lily koi, which is a local passion fruit, some citrus, and also star fruit.
That sounds so wonderful. And you live there with your husband, Carrick. Is he an American?
He is indeed. And Karen, we both met as students about 5 minutes drive down the road at the East-West Center. We both had scholarships back in the 80s. And it was before I went into the foreign ministry and Carrick had just come out of the U.S. Air Force Academy. And we met at the East-West Center, and it took us a little while to get married with dual careers, but yes, it's very, very exciting to be back. We feel Hawaii is a very special place for us.
And do you share your home with other family?
We do. We have one son, Mitchell, who just graduated from a high school called Punahou, which is very close to us too, just down the road. And it's actually the school where Barack Obama attended. So Mitchell has graduated. And of course, this past year was very difficult with many of the kids having to be online. The school did a fabulous job. And now, of course, is the transition to university.
Oh, congratulations to Mitchell. Is he having a gap year or not?
No, he's going to be starting university in mid-August, and he's very interested in environmental science and biology. So at the moment, he's off actually at the University of Virginia, working in a lab as an intern at the moment, monitoring soil samples, I think.
Oh, wow.
He'll be home again in a couple of weeks, and then he'll have just a couple of weeks to pack up before he heads off.
Oh, that sounds great, but you'll miss him.
We will indeed. It's funny already. I walk into his room and think, oh my goodness, yes, it's so tidy. He can't be here. Yeah, we do. So it's going to seem strange being empty nesters.
How has COVID affected the Hawaiian Islands, Amanda?
Well, like New Zealand, Hawaii is very dependent on tourism. And so for the state that had the lowest unemployment rate pre-COVID of less than 3%, Hawaii went to having the highest unemployment rate as the tourist industry just almost completely shut down. But on the positive side, Hawaii also fared the best of any state in terms of COVID infections. And I think that that's due to a couple of factors. One, there's a big focus on collective well-being. The indigenous Hawaiian population is very much a collective culture and one of great consideration. The word aloha really it does sum up the way in which people interact and care about each other. It's a really beautiful underlying principle. And then second, there's a large number of different Asian populations resident in Hawaii as well. And of course, those societies are also very conscious of the collective. And in Japanese culture, for example, it's totally normal to wear a mask if you have a few sniffles or think you might have a cold. So to wear a mask as a preventive measure, not only for yourself, but also for others, is very much accepted. And I think that's been part of it, the mask wearing that the CDC and others put in their guidelines have been no problem in Hawaii, as they have been in some places on the mainland.
And you've described your early love and that connection with Hawaii as a guiding force for your growth. Was it something that you felt from the first day that you arrived there?
There's so many similarities between Aotearoa New Zealand and Hawaii in terms of culture, in terms of natural beauty, in terms also of just the sense of community. So yes, I think I felt very at home arriving in Hawaii and felt very welcomed too. The East West Center is quite a unique place in that when Carrick and I were studying there, there were over 350 of us from 55 different countries, all doing master's and PhD degrees and all hosting our national days. And it was a really fascinating time. So we not only felt an affinity to Hawaii as a place, and I dance hula very badly, but love the indigenous culture here, but also just the opportunity to be with so many students from such a range of different countries and the melting pot that is Hawaii itself, given the history here of plantations and Japanese, Filipino, Indonesian, Chinese, just a range of different cultures. So it's a very interesting place in terms of both natural beauty and culture.
Your CV is very impressive. You're a senior sustainability scholar at the Global Institute of Sustainability and Innovation, and that was co-founded by Julie Wrigley. Is that Wrigley's the chewing gum makers?
Absolutely. And Julie is just an incredible visionary. She lives part of the year in Hawaii, and I actually met her at the East West Center at an East West Philanthropists Conference. She's somebody who has always been ahead of the curve. So as a child growing up in California, she was noticing increasing air pollution and seeing how the abalone, the pawa, were beginning to become scarcer. And she became really an environmentalist from about age 9. And then later she went to Stanford and did a law degree in environmental law, started working, and really has devoted her life to helping create a culture of sustainability. And just last year, she launched the ASU Julianne Wrigley Global Futures Laboratory, which goes a step further. We know now that sustainability is no longer enough, and we really need to be looking at regenerative futures grounded in Indigenous wisdom, and to be thinking about the importance not only of climate adaptation and mitigation, but also drawdown. And there's a center of negative carbon emissions at ASU inside the laboratory as well, which is focused on these fascinating mechanical trees. So Julie's always been a little ahead of the curve, and she's always been very committed to engaging students in the future. So every student at ASU, Arizona State University, which is number one in the US for innovation, with Stanford at number two and MIT at number three, and also number one for sustainability also. Every student graduates with a sustainability competency. And Julie's vision is that those students will really help to change the world. ASU is the largest public university in the US. And so having those tens of thousands of students going out each year with a true understanding of what it means to be sustainable and now regenerative in terms of really thinking about a future where we also have to be transdisciplinary and figure out how we can work together to solve the planet's big problems. I could go on this. It's such a fascinating topic.
You've worked for the New Zealand government in a number of roles, including the New Zealand Foreign Ministry, and you were the Prime Minister's special envoy to Francophone Africa. So what New Zealand Prime Ministers have you worked with?
So the special envoy role was a very special one, and that was when New Zealand was lobbying for a seat on the Security Council. And I had been based in Wellington as Deputy Secretary for International Development and leading our Overseas Development Assistance Program. I was then invited to go to Geneva as Ambassador to the United Nations and Head of Mission while we were lobbying for the seat. And that entailed also pretty frequent travel to Africa to meet with heads of state and speak to them about why New Zealand would do a fantastic job on the Security Council. And as you know, we were elected, and I personally think New Zealand did do an excellent job.
And under what Prime Minister was that? Was that Helen Clark?
Oh, John Key.
Prime Minister John Key, well, Sir John Key as he is now. And they have a holiday home, his family, on Maui. Do you catch up with them often?
No, I have not seen him on Maui, but I understand that he's an excellent golfer.
Yes. Well, that was your working life with the New Zealand government, but it's a day off for you and it's a Sunday morning here in New Zealand. Yeah. So what does a normal Sunday morning breakfast, for example, in Hawaii consist of?
Well, usually on Sunday mornings, we actually go outrigger canoe paddling on the other side of the island. So we get up pretty early and then we might hop in the pool quickly, usually just have some coconut water and then drive across to the other side of the island and go outrigger canoe paddling. So there's six man for an hour. And then we go and we have brunch in a place called Kailua. And we have a favorite little restaurant called the Beatbox Cafe. So that's our routine on a Sunday morning, which is just a wonderful way to take advantage of the natural beauty of Hawaii too.
Gosh, yes. And what Hawaiian dish would you recommend people have if they were visiting for the first time?
Well, my favorite is a dish called lau lau. And you can either have something called kalua pig, or you can have lomi lomi salmon. I like the vegetarian lau lau, but they're wrapped in taro leaves, and it's in an underground oven, very similar to a hangi, where the leaves are steamed. And so it's, again, very sustainable because it's wrapped in banana leaves afterwards, but just absolutely delicious flavors. And so that would be my number one. There's a lot of places you can go to have a luau or to actually eat Hawaiian food and Asian fusion food here in Honolulu too, which is also fantastic.
And it's hurricane season now, I believe.
It is.
You've had some bad ones.
Last hurricane season, there were so many that they ran out of names. They had to go back through the alphabet again. So we are seeing with the increase in extreme weather events, and you know, there's so many of them right now, but that does tend to mean that hurricanes are more likely and more intense. So we were very lucky last year. We had a near miss with Hurricane Lane, but when we looked at a map across the Pacific, we were certainly very blessed not to be impacted. So each year there's a lot of work that goes into preparing and making sure that people are on the lookout. And there's a great system here too. You can sign up on your phone and make sure that you get regular updates and also warning signals.
And in Manoa Valley, what kind of a house do you live in? Is it totally protected from hurricanes?
I wish. It's a pretty simple little bungalow. And in fact, most houses that are pre-1972 build require the residents to evacuate and go to a shelter. And most of the local schools are designated as shelters. So our house is 1936. So we would not be safe to stay in it, depending on the level of hurricane warning.
What about house prices? Are they comparable to New Zealand? Or I guess it depends on where you live.
Well, yes, the house prices have continued to rise here too. But I saw New Zealand prices had gone up something like 40% during 2020. So that was a huge leap. But yes, house prices, depending on which island you're on and which area, of course, similar to New Zealand, continuing to rise.
And what do you wake up to in the morning besides your husband? What's the animal life or the bird life like?
Yes, so we do have lots of birds in the garden, but we also wake up to roosters and chickens. So there's a really hilarious rule in Hawaii that every family is allowed to keep two chickens. And we have just the best neighbors. And they have two fabulous chickens, which lay really teeny weeny little eggs, which our neighbors, Brad and Kirsten, are very generous in sharing with us. So about 5:30, 6 o'clock, yes, we're hearing roosters and chickens as well as birdsong. We also have a lot of dogs in the neighborhood, and especially during COVID, when everybody was inside at the height of COVID, we would all come out around 4:30, 5 o'clock and do what's called paw patrol, when the neighbors with dogs would walk their dogs and everybody would walk with masks but exchange pleasantries at a suitable distance. So there's lots and lots of dogs also on our street. Unfortunately, we don't have one because our son Mitchell is allergic, but there's more than enough on the street to make up for it.
And what about things that might kill you in Hawaii, like snakes and so forth? Do you have anything like that?
No. So just as in New Zealand, nothing poisonous at all. So we're very lucky. There may be some things that have been brought in. You know, sometimes hear about there being sightings of a brown snake that might have come in on a plane from Guam. And Hawaii actually is one of the biodiversity hotspots on the planet. So there's a lot of effort from local conservation groups to make sure that we're working hard to try to conserve what's here. But of course, that is very difficult with the amount of tourists.
And what's one thing that everyone should experience if they're visiting Hawaii?
Now, Karen, I don't think I can keep it to one, so I might have to give you a list. But Bishop Museum is absolutely a wonderful place to start a visit. And it is one of the top 10 museums in the world. Very close links to Te Papa as well. And a must visit. Pearl Harbor, I think, is also fascinating as a national monument. It serves to remind us of just how close we came to a much prolonged World War II. And I think that's an important visit, particularly for families with kids. I personally also love Iolani Palace, which was the first building to be electrified in the US. It was ahead of the White House even, and has wonderful history too. That was also where Queen Liliuokalani was put under house arrest in 1893, which is a not so well-known part of Hawaii's history. And I think that a tour there is brilliant. You also have to go surfing at Waikiki. So just such an array of wonderful things to do. And on the outer islands, Maui, for example, there is Haleakala volcanic crater. For New Zealanders who like to hike, that is a really wonderful visit. And the road to Hana has literally hundreds of waterfalls. So that is a fantastic drive. And Oprah Winfrey, for those who follow Oprah, has a home in Hana too. And finally, the big island of Hawaii, named because it is the largest island, also has Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa, which are the, depending on how you judge, if you judge from the sea floor, the, literally the highest or tallest mountain in the world.
Well, it sounds wonderful. I'd really love to be there, and I'm sure everyone listening feels very envious of your lifestyle. So thank you for sharing a little of your life in Honolulu, Hawaii, and thank you for calling home.
Thank you so much, Karen. A real pleasure.
That's Amanda Ellis calling home from Honolulu.